Unibet.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht.
Unibet Hockey. O'Clock. Ron Kennedy would have turned 70 this past Sunday, May 7th, 2023. More than reason enough to record a couple of special episodes of Unibet Hockey O'Clock to commemorate the late, great Ron Kennedy. This episode, one of his good friends and Greg Holz will talk extensively about the life and career of Ron Kennedy. Next week, we're going to hear from Herbert Hohenberger. But to start things off, we will hear from Ron Kennedy's wife, Ricky. People who don't speak or understand German might just want to head straight to the part with Greg Holst. You can find the corresponding timecode in the show notes of this podcast. But without further ado, here is Ricky Kennedy.
Hallo, mein Name ist Ricky Kennedy und ich bin die Witwe von Ron Kennedy und möchte Ihnen, meinem verstorbenen Mann, ein bisschen in der privaten Seite von seiner Familie und Freunden vorstellen. Bei den Eishockey-Anekdoten werden andere erzählen, die das besser wissen als ich. Und ja, also der Ron war wirklich ein extrem vorzüglicher Familienmensch und vor allem auch ein total guter Freund für seine Freunde. Wenn wir im Sommer in Kanada waren, war bei uns in unserem Haus in Kanada am See immer Tag der offenen Türen. Also da, wir waren nie ein Wochenende alleine. Es waren immer Freunde da und es waren immer Familie da. Und ich erinnere mich so an eine Anekdote auch. Da waren wirklich viele da und die haben alle natürlich auch am Boden geschlafen. Wenn ich in der Früh raus von meinem Schlafzimmer bin ich über die Leute drüber gestiegen. Und dann habe ich einmal zum Ron gesagt, habe ich gesagt, weißt Ron, wir müssen das ein bisschen besser einteilen, weil das geht nicht, dass so viele da sind, weil das geht nicht jedes Wochenende. Und dann hat er nur mit einem Lächeln zu mir gesagt, ach, mach dir nichts aus. Hat er gesagt, schlimm ist, wenn niemand mehr an unserer Tür klopft. Und das war er. Das ist wirklich, er war wirklich für seine Familie wirklich immer da und dann seine Familie ist auch ein Abbild von ihm, muss ich sagen, auch seine Mutter, weil die war eine extrem tolle, gescheite Frau. Also die habe ich wirklich geschätzt. Das war so eine tolle Schwiegermutter, das kann man sich nur wünschen. Und er hat auch sie, die Mutter, so behandelt, wie er mich behandelt hat, wie eine Prinzessin jeden Tag. Mit so viel Respekt und Verständnis, das war unglaublich für mich. Ich habe das selten gesehen. Und auch seine Freunde, wenn wir in Kanada waren, der hat nie einen Freund vergessen anzurufen im Sommer, wo er Zeit hatte und mit ihm ein Gespräch zu haben von einer halben Stunde bis zwei Stunden öfters, weil er hat ja sehr gerne geredet. Und ja, also es war eine sehr, sehr, sehr schöne Zeit mit seinem, und ich habe mir jetzt noch, obwohl der Ron jetzt schon das 13 Jahre tot ist, noch immer sehr, sehr starke Verbindungen zu seinen Freunden. Und jetzt gerade dieses Jahr kommen Leute zu mir von Kanada für 3 Wochen nach Österreich, was mich irrsinnig freut. Ja, das ist eine kleine Anekdote von seinen Freunden und wie er zu denen war und wie er auch zu uns war. Und ich werde Ihnen dann noch eine lustige Anekdote einmal erzählen und einmal ein bisschen traurige.
We're going to hear again from Ricky, especially next week during the German part that we're going to record about Ron Kennedy. But this time around, it's going to be the English one. What we just heard is basically what a great family man is Ron was, what a great mother he had, coming from his wife, that obviously says a lot. But first of all, gives me great pleasure, always an honor to be talking to you, Coach Greg Holst. Really nice to record this episode with you about Ron Kennedy. Thanks for being here.
Oh, Martin, thank you. My pleasure, definitely. Ron Kennedy was somebody special, and as you heard, he was quite a man.
The story we just listened to, he always had his family back in Canada during summer times, and
it was an open door policy. So basically everybody could come in and Ricky said, I mentioned it, people were sleeping on the floor. And when she tried to tell him, well, don't we want to do something about it? He said, you know what? The one thing or the one problem might be if no one is knocking at our door again, then we've done something kind of wrong. So he wanted to have that open door policy. He wanted to have as many people over as possible. Speaks for him in terms of his character. I've done a lot of research. I've talked to so many people in and around his life, and I have not stumbled upon or across one single person who had a bad word to say about Ron, which is incredible. How much of what you just heard from Ricky still resonates with you in terms of his character and the man he was?
Oh, how much? Okay, it's really interesting that she mentioned that, because when I met Ron in 82, 83 playing in Innsbruck, who would have known 10, 12, 15 years later, we would both be living in Kelowna, British Columbia. So let me touch on a follow-up on Ricky's story. They had a beautiful condominium right on the water. He had his boat dock parked right there. They golfed up at the Harvest Golf Club. I know he was an avid golfer with stance wide open. He used to play that nice fade. They had an antique car convertible. It was a white and yellow. I'd see those two bombing around Kelowna in this car. It was absolutely, I mean, how can you miss them, right? So just to the friend stuff, I know he had lots of people coming over, but a few times he invited myself, Christine, my wife at the time, and my kids who were young, Michael and Taylor, over. We had a barbecue, a nice dinner one time. He took the kids out in the boat tubing. And he loved my kids because my kids were respectful. That was the kind of guy Ron was. My kids would have been total brats. I doubt we would have got an invitation back. But they were two real, very well-respected young men. Ron appreciated that, as we did. Our invitations, he really took to the kids. And was kind enough, and Ricky made a beautiful dinner. And I remember those times as if they were yesterday. And it's amazing how time goes by. But Ricky's right. They always had people over, very respectful, took care of his friends, as I'm sure you're going to hear stories. But I'll always remember the time we either saw each other up at the Harvest, or he invited my family over his beautiful place on the water in Kelowna.
What we're going to do, and I already mentioned it during the intro, in this episode and obviously on next week's episode, is trying to commemorate the life and career of Ron Kennedy. We're going to hear from selected friends. If we would have tried to hear from all of his friends and companions, we would have had to do probably 50 episodes, but it's only going to be two. We're going to hear mostly from you and Herbert Hohenberger, but again, from selected friends. This episode is going to be the English-speaking one, obviously for a lot of his friends and companions from overseas as well. Next week is going to be the German-speaking one for all of his friends and companions in Austria and Germany. And you being one of his longtime companions, starting off as a player and then later joining him in the coaching ranks, we're going to go through both of those instances and times. And I want to take you back to the 82-83 season. You just coming off from a season with Vienna, coming back to Innsbruck and presumably meeting Ron Kennedy for the first time. If that first meeting happened before somewhere overseas, you're free to allude to it. But just in general, how was it to be in that training camp, to be on that team with Ron Kennedy?
As to be expected. You walk in a room, you meet Larry Skinner, you meet Ron. Right away, you know they're good guys. Like, they're team guys, you could just feel it. And there's a couple of funny stories about meeting Ron, because that's the first time I met him. I didn't met him before. And I know he had played in Holland. And, you know, Ron was a really good hockey player. He was tough. He actually scored 52 goals playing in New Westminster, which is freaking unbelievable. So he had the big shot. He wasn't like the smoothest skater, but he worked and he got it done. So he knew how to play the game. So I remember he had white Canadian sticks, right-handed shot. And he used to tape with black tape a stripe down the shafts. Gives you better grip, maybe a little bit heavier. That was his way. I was totally opposite. I wanted as light as possible. But anyway, the season started. And I'm just going to say something quick about the contract that I did because they couldn't pay again to get me to Vienna. So I said, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. I don't want a salary. And they were having trouble the year before. So I said, how about we do this? 30% of the gate, that's my fixum. No fixum. So if we do well, we have lots of fans I make. And I calculated how I could, you know, if it was a bad season, I would be okay. So anyway, just getting away from that, we start the season. Ron was tough too. He could scrap. He was tough. I think we're two games into the season. And, you know, the fan intro wasn't great at the start. And we get in a fight with another team. And I got suspended. Ron got suspended. Three or four guys got suspended, like for two or three games. And I'm going, oh boy, this is not looking too good. Thinking, oh my God, we got no fans. I'm not going to make any money. So anyway, we continued on. Ron was good. Skinner, we had a pretty good team. And all of a sudden, we started doing well. Fans started coming. We had a few full houses. I had a smile on my face. And I looked down at Ron a couple of times. I said, Ron, beers are on me tonight. He had no idea why. But that's the story.
The thing is, I got a great researcher in the background of Unibet Hockey O'Clock who told me the story about you having a piece of the gate revenue. How unusual was it at that time to get a piece of all the entry fees that people paid?
I don't think it's ever happened before. So what happened was when I went to Vienna, they had to pay X amount of dollars to borrow me. They thought they were going to get me and keep me, and then paid my salary. I said, well, guys, look, if you want me to come back to Innsbruck, you guys had some trouble. Well, just pay me what I made in Vienna. Oh, they said, no, we can't. Why don't you give me 30% of the gate? And if we do well, you make more and I make a decent contract. So I got my apartment, I got my car, got my flights. It worked out. We had a pretty good team. And Ron obviously was a big part of it. I remember we took pitches on the ice with a nice sports car for a nice card for Christmas with Larry Skinner and Ron. I have those pitches. It brings back nice memories. But Ron was a real competitor. And he could shoot the freaking puck. But there's a story I got to tell you. We're playing, I think it was probably, I'm thinking the second year. And we ran into some trouble. And we needed a defenseman. So I can't even exactly remember the coach at the time, but the coach said, hey, guys, can anybody go back and play defense, you know, for a while? So Ron says, hey, I'll go back. And I go, well, Ron, you're not that great a backward skater. How are you going to do this? He said, Holstein, if they go around me, I'm going to chop their freaking arm off. So anyway, he went back on D, and I'm going to tell you, they were not happy. They skated on the outside and tried to cut to the net because he was tough. He'd cross-check. He did whatever it took to not let the other players get to the net. And that's typical Ron. He found a way.
Kind of foreshadowing his coaching career as well, that coach you were referencing to or alluding to might have been Bart Crashley. If I'm not mistaken, according to the Unibet stats.
Yes, yeah. Sorry, it was Bart. I don't know. I had Ron in my mind, so I slipped. Yeah, it was Bart Crashley. Yes, that's correct.
And the one thing that he talked about a little bit earlier, where you both got suspended, it happened in game two, according to the Unibet stats of the 82-83 season. the beginning of the year against Stade Lau. Huge blind brawl, obviously, with a lot of suspensions on the Innsbruck and Vienna side, with you receiving a 3-game suspension, Ron Kennedy receiving a 3-game suspension as well. How wild, indeed, if we compare it to the current hockey that we're seeing, were those times indeed?
Well, those times were kind of, you know, that's how we grew up. You know, in American Hockey League, how many times do we have, but with the Rangers, one time we had a bench clearing against the Quebec Nordiques, and oh my God, I was happy to freaking get out of there alive. I mean, we're talking 3 bench clearings in a game. And American League too, there was guys on the ice, guys bleeding, guys had bite marks in their neck and their back. And I'm not even exaggerating. I mean, I have scratch marks down my face for life. The guy got a hold of my face, trying to claw my eyes out. So now we come to Europe, you know, the fights were a fight, but not quite the same. But we grew up with that. So it was rough and tough. And you know what it was? It was pretty dirty. A lot of stick work, a lot of hacking. Refs didn't really call much. Holding, grabbing. But I remember that. I'm glad you brought up the stat. So I know we got suspended, and it was 3-game feats. So I'm going, holy loving. I might not make any money this year, but we got it rolling, and I did buy a whole bunch of beers for the guys. But thanks for reminding me that it was 3 games.
You're very welcome. The one thing is, Ron Kennedy just spent 2 years in Innsbruck. Obviously, both of them with you. He quickly went back for a short stint overseas, played a couple more years in Europe, but obviously found his destiny in coaching. Was there ever a point where you thought the player, Ron Kennedy, as good as he is, he might make for an even better coach?
I think at that age, us guys, I don't think 26, 27 years old, I know I didn't think about coaching or whether Ron did. We never discussed it. So, you know, now that I look back and how he played and how he organized his sticks and how he organized his life, and he took care of himself. We all drank, but he drank properly. I probably drank a little too much, but he drank properly. Just have a couple beers, you have a schnapps. He trained good. We all trained good. But he was just regimented in what he did. So now that I look back, without thinking of it at the time, yes, I could see it. We didn't talk about it, but now I understand why he was a great coach.
When he got into coaching, he met someone who's going to introduce himself in a message that he sent me in a bit. It's a person we're going to hear a lot from throughout the course of this podcast, because he sent me a couple of instances that he remembers with Ron Kennedy. We're going to listen in to what that person sent me, who he is, what he's all about, and what he remembers about Ron Kennedy.
I'm Tim Speltz. I'm currently the general manager of the Henderson Silver Knights in the American Hockey League, and I work for the Vegas Golden Knights. My first meeting with Ron was at my first general manager's job in Medicine Hat with the Medicine Hat Tigers, and that would have been the season of 1988-1989. Ron was already the head coach when I received the GM opportunity in Medicine Hat. And my first order of business before I took the job was to meet the coach. And I had known who Ron Kennedy was. Ron was a player in the Western Hockey League in the 70s. Ron had played for the New Westminster Bruins, and I knew him as a player when they came to Medicine Hat to play the Tigers. Ron was very recognizable with his huge head of curly hair. And in the early years, they didn't wear helmets. Later on, they did. But I always remember Ron's hair was the first thing I remembered. And then secondly, how good a hockey player he was. Upon meeting Ron and going in and doing a kind of an interview with each other, he was interviewing me, I was interviewing him. I knew that his morals and values were consistent with what I had hoped I could bring to the game. And I quickly learned how much Ron's experience and knowledge would enable him to be a fantastic hockey coach. So we started out, it was Ron's first year coaching back in North America with the Tigers, and it was my first year as general manager. So basically, we were rookies together. We weren't learned a lot. We had a really good year. Ron was awarded the Western Hockey League Coach of the Year that year, which was a great honor. There was great coaches in that league. Always has been, always will be, and there are today. So it was great that we had some quick success in Medicine Hat. It didn't last long. We were both dismissed after our second season, but we both went on to bigger and better things. Ron went on to coach in the NHL as assistant coach with the New York Islanders, and I went on to be the general manager in Spokane with the Spokane Chiefs of the Western Hockey League for 26 years before moving on to the Toronto Maple Leafs and now currently with the Vegas Golden Knights. So I owe a lot of everything that I learned and my success and my opportunity in the game to Ron Kennedy. And the first things that I learned about Ron is that as much as he was a great hockey person, more than that, he was a great people person. He cared about people. He took time to learn about them. And he got to be great friends with my friends away from the game. So he was a guy that made a great impression on everybody that he met.
There are going to be a lot of reoccurring topics here on the podcast when we talk about Ron Kennedy, great people person, great coach, great player, great friend, bright hockey mind, a lot of those things that will appear and reappear. The one thing I'm interested in when talking to you, you were still playing when Ron decided to approach the coaching ranks. He started coaching in Switzerland, but his first big time gig was with the Medicine Hat Tigers in the Western Hockey League. How closely were you following what he went through at that time when you were still playing? Did you pay, or did you have the time to pay any attention to it anyways?
Well, you pay attention to your own career, because I played till 93, right? So we knew where he was. You know, I didn't follow it closely, but we knew where we all kind of follow each other a little bit. But I remember Ron telling me a story, because we talked about him going to Switzerland. And I think, if I remember correctly, he told me he was a little bit, he coached how he kind of was, regimented, tough, work, organized. And I think they had trouble with him because he was tough, fair and tough, which is what a player wants. So he told me he learned a lot about that first experience. I can't remember exactly how it went, but I remember he went in and I think I had to change a couple little things because they're not him. You can't coach players like you trained yourself. So I think he learned pretty quick how to handle all the guys differently and always had a respect for his players. But how he was as a player and how he was and how he worked, his first coaching gig, you know, you're still thinking as a player, but you got to get out of that player mind. And I think he did that pretty quick. He obviously did, because a couple years later, in a really tough league, he's coach of the year in Medicine Hat. So that says a lot about Ron, how he figured it out pretty quick.
The one interesting occurrence is that the first year he coached in the Austrian League in 92-93 was the last year that you played in the first Austrian League. How was it having him on the opposite bench while you were still out playing?
I don't think I noticed. At my age, 38, I was having trouble skating up and down the freaking ice. So I don't think I was too worried about who was coaching. I was just thinking, in Felix, always tough, and I got to get through the freaking game. So I knew he was on the bench, but, you know, we didn't throw any high fives to each other, put it that way.
Let me rephrase the question a little bit. What was the first time, or when was the first time that it really had, not the epiphany, but just realized, oh my God, this is Ron Kennedy now being a coach, not the player you used to go out with, having a couple of beers with?
Oh no, that was good, because I remember sitting too, because he was doing the national team also, so I remember sitting with Ricky and him in Clangford after a couple games, and you know what, maybe once even when I was a player and he was scouting or whatever it was, there was never, I never looked at him as the opposing coach. I just looked at him as a friend of mine, and I was playing and he was coaching. You know, I know we ended up coaching together thanks to him, and that's a story we'll get into. But I don't think you really think about that kind of stuff when you're playing. You know, you play, you try to organize yourself, you try to get through the game, and feel like it's always a tough place to play. I don't think I thought much about it because where everybody's doing their job. I don't think Ron was too worried about me, what I was doing. He probably told the guys, if he starts stick handling, whack him. He probably told them that. No. So it's an interesting question you threw at me because I've never had that question before. So I think you just go, everybody does their own job. He's coaching, I'm playing, and you have a mutual respect for each other, and off you go.
Hopefully there are going to be more interesting questions coming your way. The one thing, or the couple of things that we already heard about his character was how organized he was, how hard, no, tough he was. But there are certain quirks to Ron Kennedy. One of them is going to be the main focus of Tim Speltzer's next story that reached me. I want to listen in with you to the story that he passed on, and then we'll talk maybe about some other quirks of Ron Kennedy. Or maybe you were on the opposite side of that one that Tim is talking about as well. We'll just listen in to one of the interesting things about Ron Kennedy.
I'll never forget traveling with Ron. We had to do a lot of scouting, and we were on different trips together. Ron never liked to drive. He would always get set up in the passenger seat. He would have at least one newspaper to read, sometimes two, and often three. He would get there, he would take out his contact lenses, he would take off his shoes, he would put his feet on the dash, he would put on his glasses, and he would proceed to read the paper. Until, that is, he fell asleep, which he did that very well also. And most trips, I was driving by myself with Ron curled up in the passenger seat with his newspapers and his feet on my dash. So I'll never forget that. But more interestingly, when Ron did need to drive on his own, he would often get tired if he did have to drive. And in Canada in those days, there was often people that would hitchhike, and that's the term for trying to hitch a ride and get a ride with somebody and just standing on the side of the road. So if Ron saw somebody hitchhiking, he would pick them up as quickly as he could. He would drive for a little bit and do an assessment on how this person was. And more often than not, that person would end up driving, and Ron would be exactly like he was with the rest of us when he was driving. He'd be in the passenger seat, reading the paper, feet up until he fell asleep. He would have the hitchhiker then drive to wherever they were going. The guy would stop, get out. Ron would continue on his trip until he found another hitchhiker, and then he would be start over with that. So interesting how we could read people and trust people, but more importantly, he hate to drive. Often on long trips, if he went with, and it wasn't just me, there was other people that he would ride with, he would pretend to drive. He would often start the trip, drive for maybe 40 or 50 kilometers, and then it was over. He was off and he was done his part. He had to stop. He was really tired. Somebody had to take over at the wheel. So it was a lot of fun. We laughed about it often. And when Ron had to go somewhere on his own, it was always a mystery whether or not he would get there.
Kind of find myself in that as well. I hate driving too, but I admire the level of trust that Ron obviously showed towards hitchhikers. Did you ever have to go on a car ride with him? And did you have to drive then?
No, never far. But when I heard that, I freaking laughed because I sat behind Ron for 5 or 6 years on the bus with the national team. And it's exactly the same. He'd have his big yellow pad. He always wrote the game notes on a yellow Pat, and his little freaking handwriting, I remember it. It was so neat, typical Ron. When I scribble, so I can't even remember what the hell I wrote. His writing was perfect. He was so freaking organized. Then, boom, shoes off, feet up on the in the front row of the bus, feet up, couple newspapers, and eventually off he went. He was sleeping. Absolutely funny story, and he was exactly the same in the bus for all those years.
Let me touch on those times when you and Ron were part of the national team. How did that all come about? You were playing together. Then you see him as a coach on the opponent's bench. And just in an instance, you're joining him in the coaching ranks. How did that come all about?
Well, this was 90s. I moved to Kelowna in 1994, growing up in Montreal, thinking of going to Vancouver. Vancouver was too expensive for us. And my mom and dad were out there hiking around. They found this place called Peachland, which is beside Kelowna. So I ended up in Kelowna in 90, the summer of 93, 94. So 1 year later, I started working with kids on the ice. I coached a bantam hockey team. I was working with young players. So in 96, 97, Joe Meehan and Ron Kennedy were in Poland. I believe it was Poland in the B pool. And I got a freaking phone call from them from Poland. So they got my number somehow. And they said, would you be interested? Because they knew I was working with young players and I could play the game. So I probably had a pretty good mind for the game. Coming over and being head coach for the U18, the U20, and being assistant with him with the Austrian national team. And I said, well, let me think about it. You know, the contract wasn't a big one, but it was like 12 months and it was all in shillings back then, which I think this could be a really interesting gig. So I took it on. And of course, the rest is history. But if I wouldn't have got that phone call, we would not be having this conversation right now.
Yeah, just that's been one of the questions that's always been on my mind. Would there be a coach, Greg Holz, without Ron Kennedy?
Well, probably in Canada. Because what happened in 1996, before I came back to do this gig, my wife, Christine, at the time, we drove up to Kimberley. And they were in one of the lower junior leagues, Kimberley, British Columbia. And I met all the management, and they wanted me to go up there to coach and be GM. They threw stuff at me, and they want contract would have been good. Greg, we'd love you to come. I had the job, so up a beautiful area. But I made the decision to go back to Vatns at that point because of the schooling for my kids, to keeping the German, stricter schooling. That was the reason I went back. So this all kind of intertwined with Ron Kennedy calling me in Canada if I would be interested. So next thing you know, I'm in Vatns, and now I'm all of a sudden I'm doing the U18, U20, and of course with Ron with the national team. And you know the run we had, we'll talk about that probably in a couple minutes. If I don't get that call, it's very possible we would not be doing this podcast. I would be living in Canada. I wouldn't end up coaching in Phylac. A, B, C, D.
Obviously, you had your kids' future on mind anyways, and that's laudable. But on a professional level, when getting that call, was there anything that kind of enticed you to be working together with Ron and the Federation? Or was it just go for it, we'll see how it works out?
Well, now I'm going from coaching a bantam team, going to an 18 and 20 national team. That's exciting. Ron, of course, if Ron would not have been that coach, I would not have taken that job. That is black and white. Not even a question. It's not even a question that I would even hesitate to answer. When Ron phones you and asks you and talks to you like that, and Joe called too, that's pretty, that means Ron has a little bit of faith in me or sees something in me that for me to work with him with a national hockey team for a country, that is pretty special to even get that phone call from Ron and from Joe.
We were talking a lot about the player that Ron Kennedy was, the coach that he eventually became. We know that he turned around the national team. He had success at the early stages of his coaching career. But I guess now is the time to hear a little bit about the family man and the husband that Ron Kennedy was. A great story, or a great couple stories, that reached me from his longtime assistant coach, especially in Ingolstadt, Jamie Bartman. We're going to listen into Jamie Bartman and what he had to say about Ron Kennedy, and we're going to discuss it.
Hi, Martin. Thanks very much for having me on your podcast. Share a few stories about Ron Kennedy. We had a lot of fun together, working together over the years. And the couple stories I want to share about involve is his wife, Ricky, because all us coaches have, most of us coaches have a special person in the site that's been very flexible and supportive and through the years of coaching and the job that we do. So I'd really like to share these couple of stories. And the first one is we had a road trip leaving the day before and taking the bus up north. And when we go to check into the hotel, Ronnie's ready to get off the bus and he's grabbing my suit and I'm going, "No, Ronnie, that's mine." And he grabs the manager's suit and the manager goes, "No, that's mine too." And so in the hotel we go, and obviously he forgot his suit. And so he managed a way to get the suit up there the next day for the game. But when we got back into the dressing room the next day after the game, there's a suit hanging there, and thinking that's not a big deal. But Ronnie was pissed about it and give Ricky shit because she hung the suit in the wrong place in the dressing room. And if you know Ricky, you know, she's from Austria and she's got the accent when she speaks German. And was like, "Ron, you're so damn dumb." So we got a good laugh about that. And so after that trip, every time that we had a road trip, Ricky made sure when she brought him over to the rink to drop him off, she took his suit and hung it in the bus all the time, so he never forgot it. Yeah, and another funny story, because Ron was not a cook. Ricky looked after him all the time, made sure he had enough to eat and everything like that. Not that Ronnie was useless. He just would go to a restaurant if he got hungry. But Ricky had taken off for a few weeks, either back to Canada or to down to Austria. But so I'm thinking, well, Ronnie's going to be eating out every day. And I'm going, well, I'll be joining Ronnie every day. So after the first night's over, we show up in the room the next morning for practice. And I'm all interested. I'm saying, "Ronnie, so what'd you have for supper?" And he, you know, thinking he went somewhere to eat, he goes, "No, I had goulash." And I'm going, "Wow, Ronnie, like goulash, you know, how'd you make it?" Figuring he's turned into a cook. And he goes, "Oh, it's really easy, Barts." He said, "I just warmed it up in the microwave." Ricky left, but before she left, she had made a couple weeks worth of food and had it frozen in the freezer all the time, so Ronnie could just take it out. So yeah, a lot of good times. We sure miss him. Think about Ronnie a lot. And you know, he was a great coach, a player's coach, and turned into being a really, really good friend of ours. And yeah, happy birthday, Ronnie.
Great to hear from Jamie Bartman. He's now an assistant coach on Rosenheim, just got promoted to the DEL2, so one of the bigger and storied programs in German ice hockey, now being back in pro hockey as well. So congrats on that as well. And obviously great to hear from him, like talking about the Kennedys. And apparently, and that's something that you'll notice when going through the life of Ron Kennedy. It's always Ron and Ricky, Ricky and Ron. Like a couple obviously made for each other. At what point did you meet him for the first time, like when they were together?
Well, I've had a lot of concussions, so you're asking me some pretty tricky questions here. I can't remember exactly, but I will tell you one thing. I remember Ron and Ricky together, you know, at certain points, definitely driving that freaking convertible antique car around. I can picture them right now. I remember always seeing them up at the Harvest, hitting golf balls. And I remember at his wedding on Ben Volen, at that beautiful little church in Kelowna on Ben Volen Boulevard, when I saw Ricky come in and I saw them together, I swear to God, the joy was beaming out of them. Ricky was so radiant. I'll never forget two people looking that freaking excited at getting married in my life. And I'm not exaggerating. I remember the look on Ricky's face. It was total joy and radiance. And of course, I met Ricky over the years, you know, going to see them at their condo in Kelowna and seeing them. They were living with the Holmbergers. They had an apartment upstairs from the Holmbergers. I remember going to see there. I had lunch with them several times. I'm going to tell you what. Ron treated her with absolute respect and vice versa. And if you want to talk about two people really being in love, unless they're fantastic actresses and actors, this was the perfect pair. And I'm not even exaggerating. So, but the story about the suit, getting back to that story, well, that's typical Ron. He is regimented. He wants to know everything is, and the suit's hanging 2 feet in the wrong area. Well, Ricky, figure this out. Come on, honey. That is so funny.
We know that saying that behind every great man, coach, person, player, there's a great woman, and could probably turn this around as well. But how detrimental, how important was Ricky to Ron being successful at what he did?
Oh, I would say big time. Because this job, you know, I went through it myself. It's a pressure cooker. I mean, the fans love you one day, then they hate you the next day, and then you win three more and they love you again. So having a strong partner that, you know, can take you a little bit away from the game if you can get away from it. Oh, no. I would say absolutely. If you ask Ron, he would say 100%. So Ron was – let's talk about – Ron did tell me something one time. He said, also, when you're going to coach, I'm going to give you a little tip. He gave me lots of tips because I'm going to give you one. And I don't mean this disrespectful to anybody. When you find a player, you have to know about his wife and his family because it's very important. Because the wives, so now going back to your question, how important are the wives to a player's career now and coaching? It's huge. So make sure you know about the family situation, about the wife, if she's going to get along with the other wives, because this is huge. And I remember a couple of times we didn't take players because the situation might not have been good, even though he was a good hockey player. Ron didn't mean that disrespectfully, but if you're trying to build the team, the wives are so important in the success of their husbands and, of course, of the team. So now you can magnify it a bit more. The coaching is stressed 24/7. So 100%, Ricky was his rock for sure.
He brought a tremendous amount of success to the Austrian Federation and Austria's national team. You already talked a little bit about it beforehand. I want to dig a little bit deeper as his coaching career really took off or had already taken off in Austria with a couple of championships already. Him being the guy on the national team and taking over after a disastrous World Championship tournament, I think on home soil, where they were relegated. He got him immediately promoted to the A pool again, and they stayed there for 5 straight years. How do you remember that that phase, that that stretch of time in Austrian national team's history?
Well, it, as we spoke before, in 96, 97, I believe it was, I got the call from Poland. So Ron turned that around. I mean, Joe was smart enough to get Ron Kennedy in there. Joe did a really good job, Joe Meehan. He knew that Ron can do the job. Ron changed the face of the whole freaking national team. So for me to get that call from Ron to be his assistant, work with the younger players underneath the national team, well, that is freaking, I mean, how can I say no? What an opportunity, and for Ron to believe in me. And then we got on the run. And I'm going to tell you, there's pressure in this. This is not automatic. Believe me, there's pressure, coaching all year. Then you go to the national team, expectations are sky high because I was part of it. There's a lot of pressure. Ron changed the whole mentality. I followed him. I followed him, and he'd ask me my opinions more and more each year. I'd give my opinion. He'd think about it, and he'd, of course, do it his way or whatever. He changed the face of the national team. When you think 5 straight years in the A pool, like, he's the best coach that the national team in Austria has ever had, bar down, bar none.
How did he change the face of the national team? What did he do?
When he walks in the room, all Ron had to do was walk in the room. They knew about him. They knew his regimen, how organized he was. He was like the coach said, he said he was a player's coach. He practiced hard. He practiced tough. He was fair. And just like his notes and how he took care of himself off the ice, that's how we practice. He was freaking organized. And the players had respect for him. And, you know, that A, B, C, D, and let me tell you, it wasn't easy coaching a lot of those Austrian players. Believe me, we had some pretty big heads and some big egos. Ron found a way. I backed him 100%. Joe Meehan did a great job. We had a really good team. Dr. Bockler was in there for that whole time. It was a great team. And Ron was the head. He was the kingpin of it all. Without Ron, they don't win one, let alone 5 in a row. And let's maybe throw in back-to-back Olympics. 98 Nagano, 2002 Salt Lake City. And I'm going as assistant coach to the freaking Olympics too. They talk about it. You know, I was 84 Sarajevo Olympics. That's another story. But for me to be going to these places with Ron and Joe and this group to coach, absolutely fantastic. Something I will never forget and appreciate.
He left the national team after the 02 year. He left as a championship-winning head coach. He went to Bolzano for 1 year. And on next week's episode on Unibet Hockey O'Clock, we're going to hear from a Bolzano player from that time as well. And then went to Germany, to Ingolstadt. So obviously, as your path had crossed again, they kind of widened again. How closely were you still following everything you did while your coaching career really took off in the Austrian League as well?
Well, we're not that close. So we did cross paths. We talked every now and then, if I remember right. I remember going to see him. He was coaching Berlin, and they were playing in, I think it could have been Rosenheim then. I remember going to watch the game and talking to him after, and I saw how intense and how much pressure there was in that league. Can I go back and just touch on something with the national team?
You can do anything you want.
5 years in a row in the April. And a few players were bitching and complaining because, you know, Ron's too tough and this. And I remember we had a couple meetings with the players. And Ron, every year, Ron gave me a little bit more room to speak and speak my mind. And I remember I could feel that it was going to be his last year. And I remember he was talking to the players, and he said, Holtzie, do you have anything you want to say to these guys? And I said, yeah, I do, Ron. And I'm not going to swear on this podcast, but I had a couple of choice words. And I said, what the F are you guys even freaking thinking about? With the success, with this guy coaching, if this guy's not around or something happens, I'm going to be on the golf course with him out of this freaking door. And you freaking guys, you're making a mistake with some of your attitudes. Oh, and I said more than that. I was pretty upset. Anyway, you go do your thing and off you go. So the next year, the national team was not the same. There's no names. I just know it wasn't the same because I saw a couple of players, I think that following summer after the national team or in the training camp the next year. You know what they said to me? Jesus, Holstein, we miss Ron. And I said, no fucking kidding. Sorry, I had to swear there.
See, you did swear.
No kidding. No, I had to throw that in there because, anyway, I'll just leave that part.
It's totally all right to swear in the pod as there's an explicit sign next to it anyways. But why did you get the feeling that it might be his last year on the national team?
Well, if I think back, just some of the attitudes of the players, some of the guys, you know, we had a pretty good bunch of guys too, you know, Wielden and Lillebois and Holmberger and all the guys. I could just feel it in the air. It's not something I could pinpoint it on. It was just my gut feeling. And did Ron feel it? I never talked about it. I just threw in my heavy 2 cents and off we went. We finished the tournament and off we went. But he did an unbelievable job, the best coach the Austrian ever had, bar down, bar none. And the Austrian Federation knows it, and they respect him for it.
He left the national team. He left the league. He went to coach Bolzano in Italy. He went down to coach Ingolstadt in Germany and then returned to Austria to coach Innsbruck in the 07-08 year. So a lot of time in between you becoming a championship winning head coach yourself for Villach. How did you keep in touch during those years? Did he reach out when you won a championship?
Oh, I'm sure he did. I was probably so drunk after I can't remember for 3 days.
And the concussions again, I understand.
But okay, let's just take a look at his career in Villach. 6 years in Villach, you win 3 championships. So, and I was there 8.5 years, and I know how tough Villach can be. I know how tough the fans can be. Really, I really know. So for him to win 3 in 6 years, well, I'm going to pay him a compliment, a deserved compliment. He was the best coach I feel like ever had in the history of the organization, bar none again. So he's left his mark, and that's why people talk highly of him all the time, because these are facts. This is not stuff we're making up here. 6 years, 3 championships, that's fantastic. So what a coach, what a guy, and the national team, he sure left his mark in Austria, didn't he? Unbelievable.
You know what? I'll add one right here. A great stat from the Unibet stats. He coached 312 games, all leagues and competitions taken together. So we're talking about the local league, the Alpenliga, Interliga, all the intermediate rounds, everything thrown in together, 312 games. He won 219 of them and tied 9. So that's a win rate of 70.2%. Each and every team would take that, or each and every general manager would take that in a heartbeat. Why was he so successful with what he did as a coach in Villach?
Well, consistent. The players knew what was coming. They know he's organized. They know I have great practices. He knew how to get good players. And he didn't love his players where he'd hug them, but he had respect for his players. When they worked hard for him, hey, he organized the team. He got the players. And he, in his way of coaching, he was very, very consistent. It wasn't like he's flipping all over the place and stuff. He knew what he was doing. He knew how to organize them. He, defensively solid. He was just a really good coach. He just knew how to do it. Because it's not easy. Felix, I don't think it's simple coaching anywhere. Felix is can be fantastic. But you got to grind it out for 6 years and win three championships. And all those games, 71% winning percentage. I guess I rest my case on how great a coach he was.
You know who the only coach is that coached more games on the Phillip bench than Ron Kennedy?
I'm probably in the top 10.
in that regard, you're in the top one. It's you.
Okay. Well, okay, let's go back to the phone call from Poland. If I don't get the phone call in Poland, I never would have coached in Phillip. So do you think when Ron coached his last year in Phillip and they won the championship, do you think Ron and Joe Meehan had a talk about me possibly coming to Phillip to coach? Because we were pretty successful in the U18 and U20. And we went from the C pool, got to the A pool in the U20, and we got stayed in the B with U18. Do you think they had a discussion about it? I'd have to think so. Because I had two choices. Tell them, say, who was in last place, and Felak, who won the championship. There's reasons to take either or not take either. I jump right into the fire. But because Ron was there the year before, he gave me some information on the players, yeah, and ABCD. But I'm sure there was a bit of a discussion. What do you think about Holtze coming in to take over this? And the start that I had there, you know about that, how that went. But I survived it.
Yeah, but still educate the listeners a little bit about the changing of the guard. Ron winning the championship with Villach in 01-02, and you coming in and taking over the year after. How did that summer go? How much of input did he constantly give you about players, the organization, and everything else?
Well, let me go back to something. I know Ricky can attest to everything I'm saying, his wife. When they won that last championship, I was at a game or two before the playoffs started. And they were playing kind of not great. The fans were all over. I remember this. So this is the part of the fans being so whatever, fickle. But Ron just took it, you know, as we have to take it as coaches or you freaking quit. He took it, survived the comments, blah, blah, blah. But that's how vicious it can be. And they ended up winning the championship. So I would say my decision came down to I took Felak a little bit because I had played there 1 year and had a really good year. I know it's a real hockey town. Ron was there. I knew Joe Meehan really well. But even though you know these people, you have a, other than the coaching in the second league, the players saw me coming in as a junior coach. I know that. I know that now, and I feel it, and I learned it pretty quick. So do you want me to touch on that part, how that worked? So we have a tough start, right? I think we were 3-7, 3-8, and I can't even go out of town for beer, let alone cross the ice. Fans are all over. So, and we had some close games, but the players were pretty cocky. They had won the championship, and who's this guy coming in to coach us? You know, A, B, C, D, whatever. So management calls me in and they say, Greg, we're going to give you 3 games. And I said, well, how many do I have to win? And they said, all 3. Okay, or you're gone, right? So it was in the papers and I have proof of that. So I'm not exaggerating at all. But we had made one move. We got rid of Foster, the guy that I brought in. He was the top scorer in the league the year before, so I think he's going to fit in good with this guy and that guy. It just did not work out. And I think it's the only player we ever changed in my whole career, because I hate doing that. And we brought in Sean Sumser, tough, hard-nosed kid. So I remember we went down and we brought on Peter Raffel. They called it kind of, well, would you mind going on the bench with Holtze? Because I had no assistant, right? I had Secchi, who did the door, and he was kind of a rah-rah guy. So I basically ran everything. It's not like it is now. So Peter said, I'll help him, but I'm not going to be a spy. So we went down to Steindorf, the first freaking practice that we had. I remember it was one of the toughest practices I think I ever ran. And Peter Raffel, before that practice, went in. He knows the players. He knows what they're like. He told the players, if Holtze gets fired, I'm telling you one thing. I am not coaching this team. The three games, overtime, penalty shots, overtime, I think it was. And the rest is history, and that is the fine line. You either stand up and you battle, or your career's over. And we made the finals that year.
Meanwhile, while you enjoyed success in Austria, Ron was coaching in Germany. How closely did you follow his career trajectory?
Well, we follow, you know, it's not an everyday thing, but you do have the conversations, obviously, in the summer in Kelowna. During the year, you're pretty occupied with yourself. There might be a phone call here or there, just like it was with Mike Stewart for a couple of years. But you're so occupied, like when you're coaching, you're in another world. And I know Ron knows that. And if you think Ron did the national team for all those years, he coached all year, which is pressure, and then you coach the national team. I remember him coming to Kelowna. He was just so excited to get back to Kelowna because the pressure's off. So you don't have a close bond because you're occupied in your own team, your own world. But we would be the odd talk. Always got along great with Ricky, even in the summer. I know she really liked my kids and Christine at the time. And I just have a lot of good, you know what's funny though? It's been how many years? 13? There's always times that he's on my mind because I'm still in the hockey world and I'm in Austria. And I've talked to Ricky about this too a couple of times, and you can't replace a great man like that, you know, for herself or for the Austrian Federation and all the players he coached. You just don't get that every day. Sure, there's good coaches out there, but Ron did it for a long time. And as you mentioned, did anybody ever say one bad word about him? No. And if a player ever, and some of the players that did bitch and complain, they sure changed their mind when he walked out the door and he wasn't there anymore. Sorry, I'm getting a little excited here. You know?
No, it's all good. It's all good. That's why we try to remember the late greats, Ron Kennedy, together. And obviously this serves as a history lesson as well for younger hockey fans, because there's a generation right now out there of young hockey fans that do see the Ron Kennedy trophy being handed out every year, but they don't really know what this man stood for, who he was, what great of a legacy he left behind. So that's hopefully serving for a lot of people out there to help remember the great Ron Kennedy as well. But the one thing that I'm still interested in, as your time wound down in Villach, he returned to Austria. How did it all come about? How was it to coach against him when he was the Innsbruck head coach?
Well, it's like I kind of knew the situation a little bit because I had talked to Ron and Ricky, you know, and I knew that he was going back into Innsbruck. And I was going into my sixth year in Villach. So coaching, did I actually, I don't know if I didn't coach against him. No, because I got the phone call at Christmas. I was down working in Port Alberni with the junior team in Port Alberni on Vancouver Island. And I came back to spend Christmas. I could have gone to Hamburg, Germany. I did actually get the job. We met in Vancouver. We had a talk with the GM at the time of Hamburg. But I said, I can't come right now, guys. I have my kids at Christmas in Kelowna. It's too important to me. So I met with Andy Oakes, the head guy of the Penticton Hockey Academy, because they own the Port Alberni hockey team. And I'm sitting in West Kelowna having a coffee at Tim Hortons with him. He said, okay, Greg, we'd like you to finish the year in Port Alberni. You're going to help Bryant. You're going to kind of be the assistant coach, assistant GM. You're going to be the all-around guy. I said, okay. I said, look, can I call you back? Let's do some numbers. Okay, the numbers will work good. Do I have a day to think about this? Yes. I go home to my house in Kelowna, and the phone rings, and it was Ricky Kennedy. And this, she said, you know, Ron's not doing too well, and he'd kind of, I don't want to say the wrong words, but if you came in to coach and take over the team for him and stuff that he started, I think he would really like that. You know, I don't want to say the wrong thing. And I said, oh, geez, that's, why is he not doing that good? No, he was, you know, slipping a little bit. So I thought about it and I talked to the management in Innsbruck. It wasn't my desire to go to Innsbruck to coach for personal reasons. But I said, let me negotiate with those guys. If it works out, it worked out. If it was not Ron Kennedy calling me to do it, and Ricky, I would not have gone to Innsbruck. 100%.
I think we maybe juggle things up a little bit because you were still coaching in Villach when he went to Innsbruck on January 6th of the 2007-2008 season. He started coaching Innsbruck the year after as well. That's when he had to leave the bench in December of the 08 year. That's when you took over. Obviously, right. You got that fateful call from Ricky Kennedy mentioning that he wasn't doing too well. We all know that he eventually died because of a brain tumor. At what point did you know, Jesus, this is really serious?
When I got the phone call. I got the phone call. And, you know, Ricky's a pretty strong person. You know, she's tough in her own way, and she organized a lot of freaking stuff. So by me going there, because I had turned down Felak wanted to re-sign me for year 7. Everything was fine. I said, guys, you know what? I want to go see Taylor play in Canada. Oh, we'll let you go home for 10 days to see him. No problem. I just knew it was time. Time for a new voice. There was a lot of headbutting going on. It's just not easy, but that's the way it is. And you choose your own career. But I went back and I ended up coaching, like I said, on the island and helping out. The only reason I went to Innsbruck was that. But I did see Ron a lot, obviously. And, you know, the players, we battled right down to the last second. And Ron came to, you know, all the games. And we snuck in the playoffs in the last freaking game or two. And we lost to Cartier in 6. And it was packed. And it was emotion. And a lot of that went to Ron because we just kept running with what he started. And then I would implement my own mind or my own ideas or my own personality. But a lot of the stuff that Ron did, I copied over the years. I still do some of the drills still to this day that we did back in the day with the national team. I still do them. Some of my favorite drills are Ron Kennedy drills. So sometimes you touch on them, or sometimes they're exactly the same. So he was running a pretty damn good modern, whatever, hockey practice back in the day. So, and when I do these drills, who do you think copies them? The other young coaches of Felak. And Lancey and Kropi played for Rod for a long time, national team, and they do some of the drills too. So that speaks volumes, right, for Ron's knowledge of the game and how he did practice.
Got to be talking about the forward-thinking ways of Ron Kennedy and how ahead of his time he really was probably next week with Herbert Hornberger. But I want to take this opportunity to listen into one more story that Tim Speltz sent my way. It is about the unfortunate passing in some kind of Ron Kennedy, but also about the legacy that he left behind, especially in the Ice Hockey League with the Ron Kennedy Trophy that each and every year gets awarded to the most valuable player. Because there's a funny little instance where it kind of comes full circle that the Ron Kennedy Trophy, or when and to whom the Ron Kennedy Trophy was presented. We're going to listen into the story of Tim Speltz, and then we'll talk about it.
As much as Ron and I, you know, were dismissed together in 1990 from the Medicine Hat Tigers, we remained friends until his death in 2009. I traveled with two other friends of mine that turned out to be friends of Ron's over to Austria. That year would have been in February before Ron's passing to get a final visit with him and his wife, Ricky. And it was great that everything that we could share in our lives together. So Ron was in Spokane. He had come down. He was doing some advanced scouting with us. He was here with Ricky when we had the birth of our second daughter, Hannah. He was a big part of that. It was perfect. My wife Lynn and I were at Ron and Ricky's wedding, and the thing that was amazing with Ron is he was a hockey person through and through, but to my point earlier, he was a people person, and the diversity of his friends and colleagues was amazing. That everybody that knew Ron and you know was a friend of Ron's, we were all good friends together. Their wedding in Kelowna, British Columbia was amazing. The people that were brought together there, it was a great party. It was a lot of fun. As Ron used to say, much happiness. Everybody had a great time. So there's a lot of things that you still think about with Ron and we still bring together. I couldn't be happier that there's the Ron Kennedy Trophy to recognize him and recognize the most valuable player. And another little bit of irony, when I was in Spokane, Derek Ryan is a local boy in Spokane, Washington. He grew up and ended up playing for 3 years on the junior team, the Spokane Chiefs in Spokane. I had Derek Ryan in Spokane as one of our players when I was the manager there. And Derek went on to win the Ron Kennedy Trophy in 2013-14 season. So a little bit of irony there. I couldn't have been more prouder of Derek. Derek is still playing. Right now in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Derek is a winger for the Edmonton Oilers, and we're in a second round playoff series. The Vegas Golden Knights are with the Edmonton Oilers. So interesting, we're playing Derek right now at this time. So it's funny. I always say it's a small world, but the hockey world is tiny, and everything sure ties together quickly. So very very fortunate, very proud. That I could call myself a friend of Ron Kennedy's. I miss him very much and wish the big fella a happy birthday on his 70th. Thank you.
Great to hear from Tim Speltz, general manager of the American Hockey League's Henderson Silver Knights. And there are two things that I want to touch based on that we just heard. Obviously, the Ron Kennedy Trophy and Derek Ryan being the recipient of it, but first and foremost, he mentioned that trip overseas to see Ron in 2009. His health unfortunately deteriorating when he got diagnosed with cancer and when he had to step down from the Innsbruck head coaching job. No one knew, obviously, that he'd only have a couple of months left to live. But how did you follow this? And Tim Speltz mentioned it, the hockey world is small, but still the hockey world kind of coming together, and everybody kind of felt this way coming to see him in his last months and weeks.
Well, flying across the world to come to see him. And I remember I was at one of those dinners, and that's where I met Tim Speltz and Ron's friends. We had a dinner. Ricky put on a nice dinner there, and I met them all. And I know they spent a few days there, but I just had that one because, out of respect, you know, those are his close friends that he's really tight to. And for them to fly over, once again, speaks volumes for the respect they had for Ron and the friendship they had for Ron. But I saw Ron and Ricky in the hospital. I was over at their place in Innsbruck several times a week. I would just drop in after practice and come in for 10 minutes, have a coffee. Ron would have a smile on his face and we'd talk a bit of stuff. And you be as upbeat as you possibly can. Ricky's very strong. But I remember meeting all those guys and I had dinner with them all, and they came all the way across the world to pay respect to Ron, and that says a lot. It really does. And as far as the hockey world being small, and Derek Ryan and Spokane and the Ron Kennedy Trophy, well, why don't we just throw Michael Grabner into this story about Spokane? And how did he get there? What would have happened if he didn't go to Tim Speltz? And it was in 2004, I believe it was. We were in the finals against Klangford. And Grabzy was 16, and he had played 14 games for us that year, I believe. He freaking scored in the finals. When he was on the ice, Ron was at the game. Ron and Ricky were at the game. And I remember seeing him after the game. And every time Grabner was on the ice, it was no different than it was in the NHL. You had this feeling he's going to get a freaking breakaway with his anticipation. And I said, Ron, what do you think of Grabs? You know what he said? I'm going to call Tim Speltz. So how did I get to the position I am in now and was in Austria? It's Ron Kennedy. How did the start of an NHL career go for Michael Grabner? It's Ron Kennedy. So he had a nose for it. So when we talked about it too, because I know when he phoned Tim Speltz, Speltz will do some homework, but the homework, you just got to talk to Ron, and you know pretty well. Take this guy. And Grabner was 3 years in Spokane. The first year, I think he had 56 games. He only had 13 goals. Then he had 36, 39. He took off. First round pick. 14th pick, Vancouver Canucks, NHL. All started with a phone call from Ron Kennedy to Tim Speltz, who was the GM in Spokane. And now he's in the NHL. Like, so the hockey world is very, very small.
And to this day, and you're making the universe sets kind of obsolete. Michael Grabner is still the youngest player ever to score in a finals of or a finals game of the local league. And in everything else you mentioned, you were spot on as regards his trajectory with the Spokane Chiefs and then being picked by the Vancouver Canucks. The one day that we have to talk about, unfortunately, is July 9th of 2009, the day Ron Kennedy passed away. When and where did you receive the news that he had passed?
I was in Kelowna, and I had heard, I'm not sure, I think Ricky might have called me, but, you know, it was somebody called me. And we knew pretty quick. And he was on his last days, obviously. And we did get together that summer. And she did a nice, you know, Ron's family came down to Kelowna in the summer and they had a nice celebration for him, which I was there with my boys. And yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what it is. They had a nice ceremony for him here. And I was at the one in Kelowna. And I know I met his mom and his family. And I always had a little connection a little bit with his family because we played together too. So there was always stories, you know. And I was probably a crazy bugger that Ron probably told some stories about. So I think at the end of the day, meeting them under those circumstances was not easy, but you pay your respects and you say what you can, you say your piece, and off you go, right?
We can all agree that he left way too early, but just the sheer fact that 13, almost 14 years later, we're still talking about everything he did for, especially Austrian hockey, just shows the magnificence of everything that he brought to the sport. How would you try to sum up the legacy that he left?
Well, I think Tim Spelt said it best. Being a good coach is one thing and having good drills and ABCD, but it's all about character. He took care of himself. I know he was absolutely head over heels with Ricky. They were so excited. I know I talked about it a few times. Just how he was as a human being. I mean, it's so important. Now let's throw that into being a good coach. And that's the recipe for success, because you can't be arrogant as a coach. You can't walk in and think you're something special. Ron never thought he was above the players. Like he really didn't. He taught me that too. So I was never above the players. And Ron told me something one time. He told me lots, but before I forget, I want to mention it. He said, Holtze, when you're coaching, never be afraid to get fired. He told me that black and white. He said, you'll be sad for one day. You get back on your horse. If you're any good, you get a job pretty quick. And as we've seen in the coaching world, you get back on the horse pretty quick. Whether it's in Europe, Austria, Germany, or the NHL, it's a cycle. You got a bit of a shelf life as a coach. You be upset for a day, you shake it off, and you get right back at her. And he told me that factual. But I just think his character and how he presented himself, how he took care of himself, how he treated his players. Now, add on the success that he had. National team, FELAC, Germany, 71% winning percentage. I'd say that pretty well sums it up. Coach, character, leading. His character led the way.
Can't have any better way to close out this conversation. Thank you so much for being part of this. Thank you so much for looking back on the life and the great career that Ron Kennedy enjoyed. We're going to hear from Herbert Hohenberger next week, and we're going to hear from you again on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock podcast as well. Thanks so much for doing this, Coach.
Well, Martin, thank you very much. And Ron, happy 70th birthday up there. And I can honestly tell you, you are missed by many people. Thanks, Martin.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.